we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the UFO episode, The Man Who Came Back. Commander Straker's old friend, Craig Collins, is flying a shuttle when a malfunction develops. Before Straker can launch a rescue mission, three UFOs attack, diverting Shadow's attention. The Space Intruder Detector satellite, SID, is damaged. Colonel Collins' shuttle is lost, presumed destroyed. 8 weeks later, Collins is found alive on an island and returns to Shadow. As one of the astronauts that helped build SID, he is placed on the urgent project to repair it, much against the wishes of Colonel Gray. Gray and Collins don't get on well. Collins returns to the moon, hoping to pick up his relationship with Colonel Lake. But she has moved on. Specifically, she has moved on to Colonel Paul Foster. When Collins tries to rekindle their relationship, his actions anger Colonel Lake, and she spurns him. Collins requests Foster be the second astronaut on the team to repair SID. In the days that come, Collins brutally trains Foster, almost taking delight in his suffering. Also, for the first time ever, Collins beats Gray at chess. Gray is becoming suspicious of Collins' motives. Computer analysis of the potential triangle between Collins, Lake, and Foster aren't good. Gray tries to warn Straker, but Straker refuses to listen. That night, Collins tries to kill Gray by releasing the atmosphere in his sleeping dome. Gray is convinced Collins is behind it, but cannot prove it. The next day, an accident caused by Collins seriously injures Foster, leaving him unfit for the mission. Gray tries to convince Straker, but Straker, the only remaining person qualified to repair SID, refuses to believe and continues with the mission. As Collins and Straker prepare to go into space, Gray checks with Dr. Jackson. Yes, Collins passed all the required tests, but there is an experimental test which showed something weird. When cut off from all external signals, Collins' brain goes dormant. Collins' brain has been burned out and is being controlled by the aliens. Gray confronts Collins in his apartment, and they fight, Collins winning and nearly killing Gray. Collins returns to Shadow and attacks Jackson. Unconscious and in the hospital, Gray is unable to prevent Straker and Collins going into space. At the last possible moment, Gray gets out the warning and Straker and Collins fight, eventually ending with Collins dead, floating forever in space. Okay, well, what'd you think of this episode?
Yeah. It was really funny as I was watching this. I kept thinking, you know, there's something really familiar about this, and it was driving me crazy. And all of a sudden, it just hit me like a bolt out of the blue.
Kill Straker.
A little bit.
A lot like it.
Well, I think obviously in Kill Straker, we knew that the goal was to kill Straker, but I didn't. I mean, obviously, it eventually worked its way up to that, but I mean, they withheld that vital piece of information that Straker was the only other guy who could fix SID. So they played the angle pretty well that Collins seemed all right till he got up to the moon and saw Lake with Foster. And then suddenly he's like, well, I want Foster on my team. And my thought was this was a case of kill Foster. But it didn't turn out that way. He was kind of putting the pieces in place and so that he could get Straker up there. So I didn't see that until Foster's out of commission. That's the first time that then Collins says, well, there's only one other guy we can take up, Ed Straker. It's like, oh, okay. So,
well, I think the reason I felt that it was a lot like Kill Straker was due to the completely illogical and ridiculous methods that were being used by the shadow puppets, for lack of a better term.
Fair enough. It is a little bit elaborate, isn't it? He could have just killed him.
A little bit? Mm-hmm. It's crazy elaborate. Well, it's stupid elaborate.
So is that's my question. Was it actually an elaborate plan from the word go to get Straker up there? Or were they opportunistically working their way through trying to damage Shadow, and it just kind of worked out that the dominoes fell in place where they could get it all the way up to Straker? Because it felt, like I said, it felt organic to me. He didn't go to the moon, or he didn't seem to go to the moon intentionally to bust Paul Foster. Because apparently other people could have done this had he trained them. But he picked Foster right after this jealousy angle kicks in. So that felt like opportunistic. But then if there's nothing left of his brain, we have to assume everything is alien. It's an elaborate plan. And if the aliens were doing it, why go to trouble to hide the fact that they're trying to kill Straker or Foster or blow up the moon base or anything?
Well, here's the thing. If it's an opportunistic thing to kill Straker, hey, there was plenty of opportunity to do it much earlier. I mean, if the aliens are looking at killing Straker as being the equivalent of cutting off the head of the beast, shall we say, then there was plenty of opportunity for Craig to do that very much earlier on in the episode. I mean, he is an expendable puppet. It's not like he has to maintain some sort of secrecy as to what he's doing, because as far as the aliens are concerned, yes, once the mission is done, cut him loose. He's done. He's no longer needed.
Unless he kills Straker in some plausible space accident and then resumes his high-level position at Shadow, which we'd never heard of before. Now, was he a colonel, too?
Yeah, he was.
So Colonel Gregg, Colonel Lake, Colonel Foster, Colonel Collins.
Yeah.
That place,
a lot of colonels.
Has got a lot of colonels.
Let's go. I'm glad you brought that up. Let's get on to Colonel Lake for a second.
All right. Let's get on to Colonel Lake for a second.
Yeah, just jump on Colonel Lake. There was something that really bothered me. Right from the very beginning, we see that she's on, and this is before, of course, before.
She's on that purple hair thing.
She's got the purple hair.
That actually kind of worked for me there.
Well, here's the thing that kind of bothers me about it, and this has been really nagging at me. Why?
Why the purple hair?
Yeah, why the purple hair?
Because she was in the purple hair room.
I mean, obviously you don't want to have your men have to wear a purple wig, but it just seems really weird that you have to force the women to wear it, and obviously rank means nothing.
Right.
Because Colonel Lake is Colonel Lake, and she has to wear one. So rank is irrelevant in this particular situation. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reading into it, but it kind of smacked as being of something of a gender issue. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't entirely sure how to feel about that. It kind of bothered me. I mean, you kind of get accustomed to seeing the regular women who are working in that room wear it.
Mm-hmm.
But Colonel Lake, I kind of get the feeling that, you know, we've seen Paul up there doing duty. We've seen Alec Freeman up there, you know, running the show. So obviously there's some sort of a rotating staff.
Right.
That's going on here. And because Colonel Lake is a woman, she has to wear the wig.
Yes. So looking at the people on Moonbase, looking at the people in Shadow, and this is totally an observation, but of the men, Paul Foster probably has the longest hair of any of them. And that's not that long.
No.
So, but all the women have fairly long hair. So it could be just a hairnet. I mean, a very elaborate hairnet, but a hairnet nonetheless.
Well, they could have gone a bit more.
And there are no women.
I kind of get the feeling this is really Sylvia Anderson work here.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been more utilitarian. Say, for example, something like we see in 2001 on the Pan Am space jet.
Right.
Where
the silly
helmet.
Yeah.
But it makes sense in a kind of weird way.
Just like when you go to Costco and you see the people with a hairnet over their hair, and the guys with the mustaches have the hairnets over their upper lip and all that stuff. I mean, it could just simply be if your hair is over a certain length, you have to wear the purple rug of shame.
Maybe. I mean, we know now, granted, I'm kind of doing something that I've been that I'm something of an opponent of, and that is I'm taking present day sensibilities and I'm applying them back to 1967, which is not
fair. Or 1985.
I admit. 67, whenever this was made. And I know that watching some interviews with female shuttle pilots who have long hair, I mean, they don't have to, I mean, they tie it up just to keep it out of the way, but they don't wear any kind of hat or helmet or anything like that when they're just outdoing work, be it either, when the shuttle is docked to the space station or where they're on the space station. They just kind of let their hair hang. Granted, we didn't understand that back in the time when this episode was being made, so it's not fair for me to project backwards like that. And maybe the wig is something along those lines, but it just, I don't know.
Casual sexism is a perfectly justifiable answer for this. It's not like the first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation when they had to put the guy in the dress just to prove
what the heck do they call it?
Awful.
Scants?
Bloody awful, whatever it was. Yeah.
Bloody awful. Scants is, I think that was the term.
And so, obviously the women are wearing mini skirts on the moon, and we saw plenty of that in this episode as they walked up and down the hallways. It's totally sexist. It's totally sexist stuff, and it's sexism that went with the age that the show was put together on. Mm. In some ways, it's that sort of misjudged sexism. We've put them up there. We've put them in little cute little skirts to see plenty of leg and give them the sort of sexy bonnets and the wig to make them look exotic. I mean, I'm sure it's all just a visual look for the audience thing. But at the same, which is very sexist, but at the same time, they have put women in positions of authority like Colonel Lake, like the moon base commanders, that they've had, Nina and Lieutenant Ellis, which is not consistent with 1960s society. So it's, give them a little credit. It's like putting Uhura on the bridge of the Enterprise, but they still stuck her in a skirt.
Yeah, and like I said, I didn't have a problem with, with Nina or Lieutenant Ellis. It didn't bother me that much. It was seeing Colonel Lake have to wear it.
I honestly, in that first shot, I was like, I do not recognize that woman.
Wow, no, I didn't either.
Those are arresting eyes. She's, okay. Yeah. Those are Sherlock's eyes. No.
It's Sherlock's eyes, exactly.
It's like, whoa. All right. She wears it better than he does.
True.
That was just pure, it's just pure eye candy.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I'm guessing that Sylvia probably thought that the wigs made the women look sexy or more exotic, something of that nature. In other words, it wasn't meant for us to be laughing at 30 years later. It was meant for people to be going, whoa, that's kind of.
Yeah, baby, just keep the wig on the next time we go into the room.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. I'm sure it was.
Oh, I don't doubt it. And again, this is...
It's one for the dads.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is 1960 whatever. And so I have to cut them some slack and realize that this is the values of that time. And they're kind of projecting forward to a fictional 1980. I have to give them some kind of slack for that. But it just, again, it felt really weird to see Colonel Lake have to wear it.
So let's talk about that other bull in the room there, and by that I mean Paul Foster's raging hormones. 8 weeks,
and yeah.
She's moved on.
She has moved on. Apparently, it could not have been that serious. Well, she even says to Craig at one point that it wasn't that serious.
Should they really be mixing this in the workplace?
No.
I mean, I didn't even think Paul Foster would stoop so low as to fish off the company pier. But apparently I was wrong there.
Hey, this is 1960-something projecting into 1980. I mean, I'm sure they were really imagining
the
sexual revolution, where that would have taken everybody.
I suppose. It's interesting that they bring up the notion that, 3 months ago we did an analysis on Lake and Collins, and the computer said it wouldn't cloud their judgment. And 2 weeks ago, when you took up with Paul Foster, we did an analysis of you guys, and it showed that it wouldn't cloud your judgment. But when we put all three of you in there, Computer doesn't like that at all.
Yeah, it was really funny when they brought the whole three-way thing up. I'm thinking, yeah, I would have been the first one to tell you that.
Oh,
but
I didn't
again,
even take it that way.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, I totally did not take it that way. Wow. I mean, I took it as being, you know, there's going to be two people happy and one of them or more of them are going to be mad. I did not think it could be the three of them might like the three of them as a group.
Yeah, I thought that John was talking about, John Gray was talking about a three-way. And I'm thinking, no, you know, historically that never really works out. So it came as no surprise for me to hear it, although I'm sure when this episode aired, I wonder how many women, you know, how many mothers decided to, you know, cover the ears of their children who might have been listening.
I don't think
you know,
any watching of them,
some television.
I don't think any of them thought of it because obviously anybody that understood that 1960s would know that any three-way has to be two women and one man. It couldn't be any other way. She couldn't do it. Sure, there was a law against it, probably four or five.
So,
let's see. So Ed Collins and Craig Straker, inseparable pals since they were both astronauts together. I didn't know Straker was an astronaut.
No, we knew he was an Air Force pilot and that's
in an intelligence during, at that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and that was, of course, stems back from his, you know, that's where we come to understand the friendship that he has with Alec Freeman. Now, as we've understood, of course, this comes from that second half of the production time where Alec Freeman is mysteriously gone, even though we see him in the opening credits.
This
he's no longer
story
there.
Would have been much better if that had been Alec Freeman.
You know, I agree.
Obviously, it would have been Alec Freeman's last episode, but it would have made more sense because really Freeman is the only friend that we've ever
really
seen Straker have. And it was out of place and out of character when people were calling him Ed. Mm-hmm. Just like, oh, that doesn't work for me.
One interesting bit of trivia, of course, it's more of a, just something to kind of muse over. This episode, apparently when it was broadcast, it aired before Killed Straker.
Well, since they failed with this attempt, then they had to try a little more direct approach.
Yeah, and they did that by retroactively altering the broadcast order.
So this is post Cat episode. So now suddenly we're talking again and again about burning out centers of the brain,
precisely,
and take over. Whereas in Kill Straker, it was just some form of hypnosis. If they had this technology, why didn't they just burn out Foster's brain center and remote control him?
No, because it's Michael Billington. You got to keep him. He's a regular.
Well, and the same would be true of Freeman if he'd been in there. But perhaps the control could be temporary or they didn't really burn it out per se. But I guess what I picture is sort of, you know, on Gilligan's Island, they had Vito Scotti play the mad scientist that lived on the other island nearby with the big Transylvanian castle on it. And he would periodically show up with some crazy mad scientist scheme to, I don't know, do something with I use the Islanders for experiments or something of that nature. That's kind of what I picture the aliens planning war room to be like. I see Vito Scotti there in the cape and a big hat and the Mephistophelian beard and a monkey on his shoulder, coming up with their plans.
Hmm.
And then, you know, try once and then, well, that one didn't work. Completely junk
their
that.
Their body's inept.
Yeah, junk that plan. Let's not try to refine one that nearly worked. Let's just junk it and try a completely different plan.
Well, and, you know, in a way that, you know, not to make too light of it, but I think there's some element of truth to that. I mean, if we want to look at the production order and view that as the, I hate to use the word canon, but use that as the story arc canon for this series, clearly the brainwashing method didn't really work because Straker was able to break Paul of his conditioning. So
Probably. Maybe
the aliens felt, okay, that didn't work. We need to try something that's a little bit more drastic. They tried something with the cat, realized, okay, with the thing with the cat, okay, we have something here that could, let's build on that. And it kind of culminates, so far at least, in terms of what they've done to Craig.
So let's, a couple things we got on that while we're talking about the cat and the bird braining. I was watching this episode and I was thinking, when we were talking about the cat episode, we totally forgot to mention that it was weird that the controlled guy, whose name eludes me at the moment, behaved like a cat. Does that mean that right. when you've infiltrated, the alien has somehow infiltrated into the body of the cat, some of the cat is still there, affecting its behavior? Is that an alien walking around inside that cat body, or is that a sort of almost like quantum leap type thing where Swiss cheese brain kind of thing?
I kind of viewed the cat as a conduit.
Because somehow it got, you know, the controlled shadow guy to be attacking Paul Foster like
right.
a kitty cat.
And I would say that the cat was merely a conduit in order to control the man. I mean, it was, I mean, okay let's kind of extrapolate from that story a bit. That, you know, I have no idea what the writers or what Gerry Anderson was thinking at the time, you know, if they were thinking anything about this at the time. But if we're going to kind of really get into the details of that story, I suppose it's possible to assume that the aliens probably were perfecting this technique. It was still on a trial run.
Could be.
They were not ready to do it directly with a human. So they tried it with a cat. And because it was an imperfect technique, some of the cat's behavior was being communicated into that guy.
Okay, so then let's take a step forward. In that same episode, Jackson reveals that he thinks the pilots of the UFOs are actually fully human being controlled. So there's another perhaps being parasitically taken over, or, you know, not just aliens with human body transplants, but these are physically human beings who are, as he said in that episode, with emotion centers and whatnot of the brain, burned out. Now, carry that to this episode. Did Collins, at the end, not manage to kill Straker because some of his humanity was still there?
Hmm.
Because they certainly kept playing the what appears to be Collins' thoughts of Gray telling him, the aliens burned out your brain, you're a yeah. remote control, you're, and he kind of glasses over and doesn't do anything. And that's what gives Straker the opportunity to pull his air hose and push him off. And I got the feeling they were trying to tell us that Collins, I wouldn't say exactly committed suicide, but his humanity poking through saved Straker's life in the end, his old
possibly.
Friend.
Possibly. Very, very possibly. And maybe the aliens even, maybe there was just enough of a humanity left to poke through, but not enough to regain full conscious control.
So if they can do this to Collins, maybe all the alien pilots are being controlled in the same way.
Well, maybe. I mean, we have no idea what
happens. Yeah, we have no idea what happens, but
what's
that
going
would
on
be...
with them? I mean, because they're completely altered on a physiological level as well.
But that could be because of the liquid breathing stuff. I thought they had kind of indicated
and
that the color was just from absorbing the goo.
Right. And that could be used. I mean, again, Jackson was theorizing at this point. I mean, so we really don't know the true nature of the aliens. We don't know if they are non-corporeal. I mean, in a really weird way, it would kind of sort of make sense if they were creatures of thought. So I could kind of see that. Maybe these abducted humans who have been altered are used purely for the space travel. I mean, there's a lot that we simply do not know. I mean, we could theorize and postulate, you know, for the next several episodes about the true nature of the aliens. And, you know, then, of course, it eventually brings up what the heck is their agenda anyway?
Well, it's obviously to kill Straker.
Straker.
yeah. So is Jackson dead?
Good question. I don't know. We didn't see any. I noticed in when you're reading your synopsis, it says that that Craig attacked him. Well, we don't know that. I mean, it's kind of inferred.
Pretty inferred,
confronts
yeah.
him.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson looks sitting at his desk quietly.
Turns around, and he's got this look of, oh.
Well, there's no God. Real reason Collins would have come to Shadow Headquarters.
To do anything less.
Because he knows Jackson told him on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, he was pretending to be Gray. Jackson tells him on the phone, you know, he's been taken over by the aliens, and then he makes a beeline for Jackson. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious
It's pretty obvious that he did, but it's a great question. What happened to Dr. Creepy? I don't know. I kind of wonder if he's, like, no more part of the show.
That would be a shame, really.
In a way, it would be, because even though I referred to him as Dr. Creepy, and he is kind of, like, really, really weird. What is his nationality, anyway?
I don't know.
Some
Slavic.
Yeah, that's what I keep wondering, based on his accent. But at the same time, I would hate to see him go.
But he is very handy.
Because he does add something really – pardon?
He is very handy.
He is
– in a bureaucratic way.
Yeah, in a very bureaucratic way. But now, let's get onto Dr. Jackson here a little bit. Now, in past episodes, we've seen him behave in the most suspicious way. Not he's suspicious, but he's suspicious of other people and anything that they do. I mean, he questions everything that anybody will do and calls into question any person's motive at any given time. So, When John Gray approaches Jackson about, you know, the tests that Craig has gone through, he says, yeah, all the official tests, yes. And John says, well, what about any unofficial? And says, well, it's kind of a theory right now. And I kept thinking, based on past episodes, if Jackson had even the slightest misgiving about anything, and we have to keep reminding ourselves one thing, this is Shadow, where security, not just security to prevent anything bad happening from outside, but also from within, I would expect it to be enormously tight. So everybody has to have the most rigorous psychological profiles run up on them, I would imagine, on a very, very, very regular basis, just for the sake of security.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also think that if Jackson had come up with even the most unusual, unorthodox test, as bizarre as it was, if he had come across anything that would give him the slightest misgiving about a guy who just was marooned for 8 weeks
mm-hmm.
after having a close encounter with a UFO, after a UFO comes by and blasts poor Sid, and I was a little sad about that.
Oh, it was sad. I am hit.
I was actually rather depressed. With all of that, I am actually shocked that Jackson kept that information to himself. He wanted to corroborate his data with the central computer.
But that's what he was waiting for, I think. I think he was waiting for the computer report. Isn't it kind of just like in the episode when he was giving his theory about the aliens may have projected? I mean, Straker practically had to beat it out of him. What is it, Jackson? I'm just telling you, it's this. No, what is it, Jackson? Over and over again, his commanding officer had to tell him, you know, stop prevaricating. Just tell me what it is you're working on. So, actually, kind of, he might just be so caught up in the rigor of his tests.
I know. Now, I can, on that, I can sort of get it. Because right now, he's just running theories about the aliens themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a potential threat to Shadow and possibly to Straker or anybody that is in Craig's presence.
True.
So that's a different situation. I mean, especially since everybody else gave Craig the green light, including Jackson. I just found it unacceptable. Mm-hmm. It really stretched the credibility a little bit too far to see Jackson, of all people, say, okay, well, you know, I'm going to give you the green light. You know, this will be his thought. All right. You know, my tests say otherwise, but the regulation tests say he's okay. So, okay, you get the green light, but I'm going to keep this to myself. I'm sorry.
It's not a good policy. I agree. He definitely should have told somebody. It's not entirely out of character in my mind that he might be waiting till he has more corroboration. But either way, I think his Uber Faraday cage room, though, is pretty awesome.
True.
Something inside that room lights up all those lights, which I presume is external power. So that's not blocking that. And somehow he's getting brainwave signals back out of the chamber. So it's not blocking everything, but
not entirely.
It'd be interesting to see what had happened to Collins when his brainwave went flat. I also think it's very interesting that they don't show that test. From a storytelling standpoint, I think it's interesting that, you know, partway through the episode, suddenly Jackson's like, yeah, I ran this test of hit on him a while back, and he's got no brainwaves. It's like, that's an unusual storytelling device not to have shown him, you know, doing something in the lab with Jackson.
Even if they don't necessarily have to give us any of the test results, but I think possibly the reason for that might be just to, I don't know, cast a thin veil of doubt over Craig from the standpoint of the viewer, you know, mm-hmm. so that we as the viewer, we don't fully know. I mean, of course, you know, now, I mean, you know, today we're watching it and I mean, I immediately recognize the fact that, okay, there's something really fishy going on here. And I'd have to believe that anybody else who was watching it back when it first aired would think the same thing. But maybe they were approaching it from that point that, well, if we don't really reveal that part of the story, you know, the viewer, they might not understand fully what's going on. You know, and that kind of puts them in the same position as Paul and Straker and, you know, and that, you know, that makes them kind of part of the story too. And I don't know.
I think it was better than Killstraker in as much as Killstraker, Paul Foster's behavior was so obviously wrong that everybody could see him. He was acting in a way completely antithetical to what we'd seen Paul Foster behaving at in the past. In this, not so much. He still just seems to be the quippy kind of friendly, hey, old man, hey, whoo, that he's doing a very good job of passing for himself.
Mm-hmm.
There's just those few moments where, like when he goes to kiss Colonel Lake and he just won't let go.
Yeah.
That you kind of go, well, his personality or something about him is different. Maybe it is. He's just pissed off of being jealous. But I felt they held the suspicion of what he was ultimately trying to do. You know, could the aliens have timed it so that he would get back in time to go on the repair mission to Sid? Maybe his goal was to destroy Sid completely.
I don't know. I mean, that's also something else which is a little bit vague. You brought up the point earlier that maybe the opportunity to kill Straker was simply just a fortunate set of circumstances on their end to allow for this situation to happen. Could the same thing have been with them coming in to attack and possibly destroy Sid? And then, oh, hey, wait a minute, we got a human here. Maybe we can do something with him as well at the same time.
The only thing that really makes me think that it was meant to be a plan from the word go, which, as you rightly point out, was a ridiculously improbable series of events that they didn't plan to get him and Straker up there when he could have killed Straker at any time. But the only thing that makes me think that it was a plan all along with a definitive conclusion, which was killing Straker and or possibly completely destroying Sid once and for all, was that he didn't really do enough when he tried to kill Colonel Gray. And I don't mean in his sleep dome. I mean when Gray confronted him in his apartment. He struggled with him. He beat him with a statuette of a rocket about the head, and he left him for dead.
Yeah, if he wanted to kill him, he should have killed him.
And well, I think he thought he had killed him, which
really?
Is why I wonder why Jackson is dead. Yeah, you club somebody in the head with something like that and leave a big clump. Yeah,
true.
You kind of suspect that they're dead. But the point is that he would have been found. And as soon as he was found, Collins is rumbled. And if Collins is rumbled, his value as an infiltrating agent is done. So
it kind of points to a short-sighted, although it wouldn't be the first time.
Well, it could be
a short-sighted plan done by whoever is controlling him,
Vito Scotti, or it's because Collins outright said, "You're being controlled by the aliens," and they go, "Oops, I'm rumbled." And if he knows it, Jackson knows it, or somebody back at Shadow Headquarters knows it. And so I've got to take the steps to go. But
and then there was another thing, and that was Collins. If I were in his place, I would not have done what he did in trying to confront somebody who, for all intents and purposes, is working for the bad guy.
Gray, you mean?
Yeah, Craig. No, I mean John Gray. Approaching Craig. John Gray approaching Craig, like that, and saying, you're being controlled. You know,
that was stupid. That was incredibly stupid.
Dumb.
Unless you brought a gun.
Exactly. Or you have some kind of backup. You just don't approach someone like that. So I found that to be, as far as a story item goes, I mean, for me personally, it was just, you know, one more thing to kind of stretch the credibility factor a little bit too far. I mean, especially if Gray understands, I have no proof, but I strongly suspect that Craig tried to kill me by suffocating me. You know, with that, you gotta kind of have to take a step back and say, maybe I really don't want to screw with this guy, especially since Craig appears to be quite the physical specimen in terms of activity.
Right.
I mean, he was able to throw. Throw Paul all over the place. On the moon. I have to admit, that was kind of interesting. Martial arts instrumentation testing.
That is an interesting idea. I mean, I think I get the idea behind it.
I kind of get it. You're distracted. If you get it wrong, you get thrown. Kind of what I was seeing.
I guess that could have been it, too. I was thinking that they're fighting and giving him a test so that he's doing two things at once.
But of course, every time Paul got something wrong, he ended up getting thrown.
Yeah.
So, and maybe it was simply a matter of an added distraction on Paul's part so that he allowed himself to get thrown. I mean, it's very possible. But yeah, I thought that was that was one thing I rather liked. One of two things that I rather liked.
Now, what I didn't like, well, I'll tell you what I didn't like. You tell me what the other thing that you rather liked is. The thing I didn't like is, and remembering back to Killstraker, what happened when the dome... Was it Killstraker? No, it wasn't Killstraker. It was one of the earlier episodes where the alien shot the window.
Right.
And they had the balloon with the nasty face of Straker.
Oh, yeah.
As the air pressure went down the thing. But Gray's bed did not super inflate as the air pressure goes.
Yeah.
Which would have been a much cooler effect. So I was disappointed by that. All right, what was your other thing?
Well, the one thing that I did like is as Gray's suffocating and he's trying to make his way out of the room.
Oh, the sound.
The dead silence in his room. And then you cut to outside of his room where you're looking at the gauge and you hear the air hissing as it's bleeding away. And then you cut back to him and it's dead silence. And I think it's more scientifically accurate. But B, it was just creepy.
It was dramatically effective.
Very dramatically effective.
Especially right there at the end when he got through the first door and he looked like he's shouting.
Yeah.
And there's
no sound.
Yeah.
It was very disturbing to watch, as it should have been. And that was a little dramatic touch that I really did like. And it caused for a feeling of uneasiness. And I like that they do that. It's those little dramatic flares which I think really helps sell this show.
Let's see. What else is there? The blind man having the weird feeling about...
Oh, yes. Sir,
I didn't like
Esmond.
That.
What was that about?
I didn't like that.
I didn't like it either.
You know, I got the impression that Collins is being controlled by some sort of electromagnetic force power.
Not psychic.
And not psychic. Although the cat thing and the Ouija board did seem to be perhaps that... And the telepathic human guy, maybe... Maybe whatever controlling power the aliens have, whatever electromagnetic resonance is, operates at what we would laughingly now call psychic energy levels or something of that nature. But yeah, the Sir Desmond, just sort of freaking out in the presence of Collins.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't care for that.
We've talked about this, Killing especially time. In the in previous episodes. I mean, this was padding.
Yeah.
Really, because it. I mean, the only purpose that it serves is just a tiny little bit of exposition later on Gray's part when he says, remember the blind man who trembled in your presence? And I thought, well, that was dumb.
Actually, it is the first instance where we have tangible proof that there's something physiologically wrong with Collins, because this is somebody reacting to the physicality of his existence, not from his behavior, because obviously he can't see what his behavior is. Whereas everything else, he hated Gray before he even disappeared. The two did not get on.
Right.
So he's overly aggressive with Lake. So kissing her. So maybe you could argue that whatever they had done to him amplifies his emotions or inhibits his action on his emotions, like a alcohol suppressing your inhibition center. You know, he goes for Lake and he really goes big and she doesn't like it. He doesn't like Gray. Let's kill him. You know, right. The inhibitions are down. It still could be that I don't like you. I don't like Paul Foster. So he hurts Paul Foster. And so throughout this whole thing, they have layered it so that it's not 100% clear that his actions are 100% controlled by aliens. Influenced, obviously, because that's a UFO, and it wouldn't be a story if it hadn't been somehow influenced by the aliens. But this is the point where we see there's more to it than just he's a little out of control.
True.
So.
But I'm still stumping. Or just completely boggled over that whole scene with Sir Esmond. Sir Esmond is his name.
I didn't actually catch his name. I heard him call him Sir something, but...
Yeah, Esmond.
Esmond.
What was that supposed to be? I mean, aside from the fact that you've got this blind man who's having a bizarre reaction.
These blind people have extrasensory powers.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering, if they were suggesting that.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah, clearly.
That because he's blind, that there's some overcompensation going on in the parts of the brain, and he has some kind of ESP, and he's picking up something very unusual emanating from Craig.
Well, you know, I do my best to forgive 1960s television. We had this discussion, Simon and I did, on some of the episodes of The Prisoner, where they have taken these ideas about the way the brain works and psychic intuition and things like that. And in the 60s, you could be forgiven in thinking that it's real. And right. That in 20 or 30 years from now, we're going to know a whole lot more about psychic powers and premonitions and telekinesis. And you could then extrapolate that and say, well, then the aliens ought to know a whole lot even more than we do. You know, now anyone who thinks it's anything but complete crap is, you know, totally off base. But back then,
there were some studies, people. Yeah, ESP studies were all the rage for a time in the 60s and even into the 70s.
Exactly. And there was a lot of people coming up with evidence, and you can't see the air quotes there, but evidence that it was a measurable phenomena that, so I forgive them the story there, and I think that's what they're getting.
Well, I'm sure
at. It's
that's
like,
where
okay,
they were
the blind
going,
man,
but
you know, your senses.
It felt like a waste. It really did. I mean, I think something that would have worked a lot better is if at some point they're walking through shadow and maybe they've got some really unusual communications set up that they're experimenting with that maybe they're going to launch and they're looking at some data or looking at a computer monitor and watching a signal that it's supposed to be picking up. Craig walks right by it, and because he's got these signals that are being beamed into his head and he passes too close to this instrument, it goes haywire.
Yep.
I would have liked that a lot better.
That would have been a lot more tangibly real-world electrical as opposed to it's a psychic link. But
right.
Yeah. So... Because as far as we know, only psychic people can pick up on psychic powers.
Well, and that again suggests that maybe Sir Esmond, because he is blind, that he has developed some kind of ESP or something along those lines.
You know, one of the biggest portions of the human brain is dedicated to visual input. That's a
true.
Very large area. So you stop using that for visual input, who knows, you could take over the world with your psychic powers afterwards. You super hearing, super smell, super taste, and super psychic powers.
Mm.
Not worth the trade-off.
No,
frankly.
No, thank you. No. I'd rather keep my sight.
I think that's all I've got.
on this episode. It was I enjoyed it.
Really?
I did. I kind of enjoyed it.
I didn't like it at all. I mean, it started off kind of to me. It felt like they were starting something that felt like it was going to be some sort of psychological thriller. And I don't know. The whole thing kind of came off poorly. I mean, after a few dramatic touches here and there, I really was beginning to feel like the story was falling apart under any kind of scrutiny, or at least my scrutiny. It was just crumbling right in front of me. I thought it had really, really bad logic and too many loose threads. I didn't like Sir Esmond's response to Craig. I thought it was way too out of the blue. And then, of course, what happened to Jackson? Who the heck knows? The actual motive, you know, what was their final agenda is still an enormous mystery, you know, and chalk that up to another whole bunch full of mysteries, especially about the true nature of the aliens and what their motives, what their end game is. Who knows? I mean, to me, this really felt like an episode that had a lot of promise, but it was another episode that kind of was disappointing instead.
You know, I think we had mentioned, I don't remember if it was we were talking about the last episode, a couple of episodes of U4, or whether we were talking about a couple of episodes of something else. We had mentioned there for a while that the episodes had begun to get, not much to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think I figured out what it is. I think the episodes where we had more to talk about were the episodes where we were world building Shadow. We would learn more about the way Shadow operates. We learn more about the way Straker operates. We learn more about the nature of the aliens.
Oh, like Subsmash.
All of these things kind of give us something to interact with and say, oh, well, this is a new piece of the puzzle. But, Sound of Silence, this episode, they're not giving us a destruction. They're not giving us anything new about the world that we're visiting. Now we're just kind of seeing events through it, and they've stopped the world building, and that does make it less interesting.
You make a great point here. I kind of think that maybe since there was the halt in production due to the studio fire, they resumed production. Maybe Jerry was caving under pressure by the studio heads to make the series the way they wanted it to be. So he tried to possibly steer it in the direction less about the world building, which is what he wanted to do. And maybe that's why those stories were better, because that was what he was really interested in and wanted his writers to really focus on. So they came off with better quality, possibly. I think you make a great point.
And finally, the actor who plays Peter Jackson's name is Vladek Shebal.
No, dear.
Shebal. Vladek is, of course, just how you'd expect it to be spelled. Sounds just like it's spelled just like it sounds. Is Polish.
Uh huh.
1923. Concentration camp during the war.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So, and of course, I think he's been in lots of different shows during that period. But of course, I think one of the biggest that you would know him from would be Kronstein from Russia with Love.
Of course.
So, anyhow, so I hope he's not gone. I hope we see Dr. Jackson again in future episodes.
I kind of hope so, too, even though he annoys me.
Future episodes.
I know. Not many left. Even though he annoys me, and I finally refer to him as Dr. Creepy because he is, I do kind of like him in a rather odd way.
I think he's gotten more likable as the show has gone on. I think they've given him better parts. He was more adversarial earlier.
Yeah.
He was like the doctor working against them. Or in one case, he was like General Henderson's stooge in...
Now I was going to say stooge.
In, what was it? Was that Paul Foster's court-martial episode?
Yeah.
He's got an interesting case. Well, having said that, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Kill Striker.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.